Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Today is December 1st, 2021. The markets were down today with the Dow closing at 34,022, the NASDAQ at 15,254, and the S&P at 4513. I just want to comment on that for a moment because, you know, it seems like people seem to get all worried when the market's going, down, and it's like, oh no, what's going to happen? And, you know, I look at some of the numbers, you know, from even maybe like a year ago, and we were here, and did people panic then? I'm looking, not even a year ago, July 21st, 2021, the numbers were 34,798, 14,631, and 4,358. And today we're at 34,022, NASDAQ 15,254, and the S&P 4513. So, you know, people get in a panic. They think, you know, oh my gosh, the market's falling. But were we in a panic in July that it was where it was? I'm just kind of try to keep these things in perspective. So that's my last comment on that. Our topic tonight is considerations in holiday spending and gifting. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. Kyle is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Kyle. He'll write it down and he'll bring it into the studio. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So again, our topic this evening, holiday spending and gifting, considerations in holiday spending is what I initially thought. And so I want to touch on a few items this evening because, the program before the show this evening was talking about, GDP and that our GDP relies on consumer spending, basically up to like 70%. And then there was a segment talking about buying and buying new or buying versus buying used. And those are all things that obviously play into the, you know, marketing that we have coming at us every day, that we're bombarded with, the marketing, and that our children or our nieces or nephews or friends or family may be influenced by. And especially this time of year when we have the holidays and people buying presents for each other and this pressure to spend. And I like to just kind of pull back and let's think about these things and what other options we might have, and how do we be present in the moment and not influenced by all of that marketing and that fervor that's coming at us. So I thought it would be a good time to just kind of talk about a few things. So holiday spending and what that entails and some options on giving. how are we spending and on what? So are we using cash? Are we using our debit cards, which some people think is like cash, and credit cards? What are we spending on? Are we spending on wants, needs, experiences, or things? I thought I could just kind of give some high-level considerations on this and then delve into a few things and what are the repercussions, the second shoe to drop, so to speak, after the holidays and after this, you know, spending spree that we have. And I'm one to want to support the economy and support our local retailers and, you know, make sure everybody's staying in business. It's just about being smart about what we're doing. So, and then I also want to talk about gifting and the considerations around gifting and what some people think about as gifting. I have clients who will say, how much is it that I can give? What's the annual amount? And there are people who don't even know what that means or what we're talking about. So I will cover a little bit about gifting as well. So in talking about spending, I do think that it's worth considering how you're spending and what you're using. So cash, you know, people will say cash is king. It's great if you can use cash. You're avoiding things like credit card fees and expenses. And I am going to talk in much more detail about that. So cash could be one way to do it. But you are also walking around with cash and you may spend without thinking more, you know, more thoughtfully. When someone has cash, you know, the saying that it burns a hole in your pocket. There are people who maybe having cash, it isn't the best way to pay for transactions. Because if you have cash in your pocket, does that mean you would spend when you otherwise might not if you didn't have it, you know, in your wallet, in your purse, in your pocket? So cash can be good for some people, but cash might actually incite spending that we would ordinarily not have if it's there. So you have to kind of sit and reflect, are you the kind of person who blows through cash or doesn't? I typically don't carry cash myself. If I feel like I don't have cash, then I'm less likely to spend. Now, I do have a credit card and I do use a credit card, but it really feels very different to me using the credit card than it does cash. It's almost like I feel like cash is extra and maybe more likely to spend cash if I have it. So I've just for years have not really been one to carry cash. I am more thoughtful in whether or not I use the credit card. And I am one who pays off the credit card every month, so you don't have to worry about that for me. But you might be someone who thinks that the credit card is an open line of funding for whatever you might buy. So for people who may be, what do I want to say, prone to put too much on a credit card, then cash could be that better option for you. Really try to, you know, set up roadblocks for yourself, knowing your own character, I guess, is what I'm trying to kind of illustrate tonight in the start of the show here. Let's think about what our spending habits are, how we spend, and protect ourselves beforehand. And this is even before we get into what we're buying. This is just how we buy right now, cash or credit card. The word I'd like to say about debit card, some people feel better about using a debit card than a credit card because they feel like, well, credit cards could have high interest rates and high finance charges and cost a lot of money in the long run. So they feel better about a debit card. But a debit card also could feel like, you know, the ATM where you're just using up cash in the bank. My concern always about debit cards is it is tied to your bank account. And should your debit card get compromised, they could empty out your bank account and that could put you in a bit of a pickle. So I am not personally a fan of debit cards. But again, if it works for you because it's better than having cash because it's burning a hole in your pocket or better than having a credit card because you feel like you have unlimited resources, well, then debit card might be the route for you to go. So tonight we're talking about considerations in holiday spending and gifting, and I will talk in more depth about credit cards and the complications of using credit cards, a little bit about credit scores tonight, and then gifting as well, and how we can rethink maybe the gifting that we're doing this year. We are coming up on our first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is John Dodds, a WDIY member and volunteer for more than 20 years. You may be one of our members who has an IRA as part of your financial planning, and you may find that you need to take a minimum distribution from your IRA this year. Why not consider what is called an IRA charitable rollover? It allows you to minimize your tax obligations, meet your required minimum distribution, and at the same time, make a contribution to WDIY, your NPR member station, for more than 26 years. Thank you for your consideration.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I appreciate that message from John Dodds about another way to give this year, which is, as he mentioned, from your IRA. If you are age 70 and a half or older, or at age 72, in lieu of doing a required minimum distribution or part of your required minimum distribution, you may make what's called a qualified charitable distribution, a QCD, we often call it, and it has to come directly from your IRA to your nonprofit, and you can even deliver that check or mail that check and get a receipt for it, and then you don't have to report that income as part of your IRA distribution. Again, that is for a qualified charitable distribution based on at least age 70 and a half. You have to be age 70 and a half or older to be able to do it. You can't do it, days before that. So thank you, John Dodds, for that message. I appreciate that. And you can do it to WDIY as well. So we are talking about considerations in holiday spending and gifting this evening. If you have questions about gifting or holiday spending, credit cards we're going to talk about, and credit scores we're going to talk about a little bit, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I first kind of want to set the table before I jump into too much of the details on the credit cards. And setting the table is, how are we spending? Are we using cash, debit cards, or credit cards? And there's implications of any of those depending on our own personality and discipline in how we spend, but also on what. And the what is wants, needs, experiences, or things. So some of us spend on things we want, like a new, phone or a new car or maybe a new, I don't know, what might it be? New television. But then we also have needs. Needs could be a new coat, new shoes, new PJs. I know as a child myself, I'm from a family of six children. We, for the holidays, got needs. I remember getting PJs. I remember getting a hairbrush. I remember getting a hairdryer. We received more need type of gifts than wants. I do remember getting a stuffed animal when I was like four, but other than that, I think it was mostly needs. And some people like to give experiences, and experiences can be things like maybe movie tickets, where you go out with your best friend to the movie, or your child, or your partner. Experiences might be a trip if we really want to get extravagant, maybe a vacation, a family vacation. And I guess it could be things as well, things that we may or may not need. So When we're thinking about holiday spending and gifting, we again want to think about how are we spending and what are we spending on? Wants, needs, experiences, or things. And I'm going to have some ideas as we get, you know, later in the show about maybe some ideas for gifting in a different way that you may not have thought about. So let me start with that part of the how are we spending that is probably the most problematic, which is credit card spending. For people who use credit cards and pay them off every month, you're probably not the people that this is, you know, geared to. It's not who I'm speaking to, but you may know people who have credit card problems, or quite often we don't know about the people who have credit card problems because they don't want us to know. They don't tell. Sometimes people feel ashamed about it, but it, you know, they might have shopaholic tendencies, or it translates into shopaholic tendencies because they're actually so giving. I know someone in particular who's very, very giving. Well, it translates into shopping and giving for people and then racking up credit card debt. So you have to be very, very careful about this if you are someone who shops and uses credit cards. So there was an article I looked up on the website thebalance.com, and it was a pretty good article, and it was written by a Jeremy Vohwinkel, and it was actually just I guess it was updated on November 29th, interestingly, and it talks about, you know, the convenience of credit cards, and that is why so many of us use them. I mean, I can't even tell you the last time I wrote a check at the store, and that's what we always used to do. I remember when you couldn't even use a credit card at the grocery store, and now, you know, you put almost everything on your credit card. And one of the reasons people do that quite often is because of the points. There's sometimes paybacks, you know, you get points back, you get money back, and that could be well worth it. I also do keep in mind sometimes with the smaller retailers, the small mom and pop shops, when you're using a credit card, they do pay fees to the credit card companies to have that ability. And, you know, it does help them keep business and have business because so many people do use credit cards. But I try to watch for that when you're working with smaller mom and pop shops, that if you can use cash or write a check from your bank account, then they do not have to pay the fees on for the credit card. So sometimes I think about that and try to, you know, help out that way by not using the credit card for those kinds of purchases. Obviously, for some of the larger purchases, it's certainly beneficial when we are earning points, larger purchases like appliances and things like that. But the point of this article on thebalance.com, it was called The True Cost of Credit Cards. And I think it was really powerful only because I could talk about this, but they've already kind of run through some of the examples. And I loved this one in particular because it talked about charging a television. And the television was $2,500, and they put it on their credit card, and the credit card had an APR, an annual percentage rate of 18%. And quite often, the credit card finance charges are higher than that. But at 18%, the article gave as an example for a $2,500 TV set, the monthly payment could be as low as $50 because how the credit card providers calculate the payment. All right, so a $2,500 TV with a minimum monthly payment of around $50 is going to take a very long time to pay off. And there are people out there who think that as long as they're paying the minimum amount, they have no problem. Well, no, because the credit card company loves you. You're the kind of person they love. Because if you're only paying the minimum amount, it will take many, many, many years to be able to pay off that balance. And the article on thebalance.com goes into the numbers, and I will share those when I come back from this next break because it's going to take me longer than it's going to take me to get to the next break. So if folks, if you have a question this evening, you're welcome to call in and you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, just give your question to Kyle and he'll write it down and he'll bring it in to me and then I'll answer the question as best that I can. And you can also send questions through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. And as regular listeners know, podcasts of prior programs are also available at wdiy.com under public affairs or on the website yourfinancialchoices.com. Again, if you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Psst! Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune into WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available at WDIY.org and on the WDIY app, as you just heard. Tonight, we are talking about considerations in holiday spending and gifting, and we talked a bit about how we spend and on what we spend a bit, and then kind of diving into the details tiny bit about credit cards, because this is the biggest shoe to drop after the holiday season. I just see people, you know, get caught up in the joy of the season and giving and then the stress and panic afterwards. So it's about trying to be proactive, as we say at the end of every show. Be proactive. Understand your triggers. Understand what works best for you in spending. Is cash burning a hole, or does credit card make you feel like you have unlimited, you know, access? Then don't use a credit card if that's your case. If you spend cash, don't use that. If it burns a hole in your pocket. So kind of set yourself up, you know, give yourself bumper guards ahead of time. Diving into the details of a credit card, again, I don't feel that credit cards are bad. I have them and use them, and we get lots of points, and we use it for almost all of our purchases, but we do pay it off every month. And the example from thebalance.com in this article by Jeremy Vohinkel that was called The True Cost of Credit Cards demonstrates the unknown that many people don't think through. And the example was buying whatever it might be. It was $2,500 in this story. It was a TV, and the minimum payment was about $50 with an 18% finance charge. If someone only paid the minimum amounts, according to these calculations, it would take 333 months to pay off the credit card. Now, they said it would require almost 28 years to pay that off for $2,500, and it would end up costing $8,396 in the end, and you would have paid interest of $5,896. So think that through. When you go into the store and you absolutely have to have that item because it's on sale and they've, you know, teased you into coming in and going in and shopping at midnight, they've teased you to come in and buy this television at such a great price of $2,500, and you haven't thought this through because you just have to have it, so you're going to put it on your credit card, and if your credit card has 18% rate or higher, I mean, it's going to cost you a fortune if you're only making a minimum of payment. So you want to make sure that if you are going to do something like this, that either you can pay it off and pay it off all at once, or that you at least pay more than the minimum. at least more than that. So try not to get caught up in the sales. The sales aren't such a good deal if you have to put it on credit. So think like that. Sale, not such a good idea if you have to put it on credit. And then what else, you know, happens with that? If you end up putting something on a credit card, that also affects your credit. And that is the other shoe to drop. So both shoes are dropping after the holiday season, not only in the credit card payment and the cost of the credit that you've incurred, but what is it going to do to your credit score? And there were a couple articles I found on this. You know, the big credit score kind of agencies, credit agencies are Experian, TransUnion, and Equifax, and they all have their own website, and you can find articles about this. But there's also quite a bit of good educational information on a government website, and regular listeners know I like the government websites, and it's usa.gov/credit-reports. So usa.gov /credit-reports. And there was an article there about credit reports and scores and how the credit reports list your bill payment history, your loans, your current debt, and other financial information. It can also show where you work and where you live and, you know, some other information about like being sued or arrested or filing for bankruptcy. Why would this be important as you're charging that television in the big box store? Why is it important to know about what's going to be impacted when you're putting credit on your credit card or when you're applying for credit? Because it's more than just institutions that are giving you lines of credit that look at this information. It could be a future employer that may look at your credit report. It could be a landlord when you go to rent an apartment, that someone might check your credit and they might be have concerns if they're seeing things on your credit report. And if you can't pay for that television in X number of years and the balance is so large, you may have to file for bankruptcy or get debt canceled. And that is going to affect your credit report. So you really have to think in the moment when you're going to buy, what does this mean more than just this moment of, you know, euphoria when you're shopping and buying presents? Let's be a little bit smart. Or, you know, if you want a television or you want to gift a television to someone, does it have to be a $2,500 television? Could it be a $200 television or a $400 television? You know, I'm not one to buy these things frequently, but so I might be off on the prices, but let's think about what we're doing. Are there alternatives? Can you buy something used as well? So how are credit reports used? The article continues, credit reports help lenders decide if they'll give you credit or approve a loan. This could be important as well if you're going to buy a home or to apply for other type of credit as well. So the credit reporting agencies collect and maintain this information for your credit reports, and you can check it. So why should you check your credit report? Because they recommend that you check it regularly to make sure that your personal and financial information is accurate. And it also helps to make sure nobody's opened fraudulent accounts in your names. If you find errors on your credit report, you can take steps to have them corrected. So how do you check your credit report? You can go to annualcreditreport.com. So, or those three agencies I mentioned, but I always felt like I knew that this website was an okay one. So annualcreditreport.com, you're entitled to a free annual credit report from each of the three credit reporting agencies that I mentioned, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. So you can go to annualcreditreport.com and I think link to any one of these. And so what you could do is get one maybe in January and one mid-year, and then leave the third one option open in case something comes up that you feel like you need to check it. The article does mention that many people are experiencing financial hardships because of COVID-19. And to remain in control of your finances, you can get a free credit report every week through April 2022. And you can request all three reports at once or one at a time. And that's typically what, we would say. So you can visit that website, annualcreditreport.com, for more information on that. Folks, we are at the halfway point. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And when we come back, I will spend some time talking about gifting as well. We will be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Good evening, WDIY Lehigh Valley Public Radio. I'm Shondi Gray, and it's now 6:30. Lehigh Valley weather right now is 39 with clear skies. For your Thursday, you're going to have a chance of showers before 9 a.m., and then a slight chance of showers after 11 a.m., mostly cloudy with the high near 57. Thursday night is going to be partly cloudy with low around 37. Friday is going to be mostly sunny with the high near 46. Friday night, you're going to be low around 29. And for your Saturday, mostly sunny with the high near 47. And Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 25. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shondi. Welcome back, folks. We are talking about considerations in holiday spending and gifting. And I'll give you some tips on gifting, some ideas this year as well. I'm just going to wrap up my little discussion on credit scores, credit reports. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, give your question to Kyle, and he'll write it down and bring it into the studio. So just a few other comments from that website, usa.gov/credit-reports. They do mention that you can that your free annual credit report does not include your credit score. So there is a difference there. You can get your credit score from several sources. Your credit card company may give it to you for free. You can also buy it from one of the three major credit reporting agencies. When you receive your score, you often get information on how you can improve it. You could also do a credit freeze placing. As some people ask about what is a credit freeze. Placing a credit freeze allows you to restrict access to your credit report. This is important after a data breach or identity theft when someone could use your personal information to apply for new credit accounts. Most creditors look at your credit report before opening a new account, but if you've frozen your credit report, creditors can't access it and probably won't approve fraudulent applications. You have the right to place it or lift a credit freeze for free. You can place a freeze on your own credit files and on those of your children age 16 or younger. And then they talk about how to place a credit freeze on your account, and you can contact each credit reporting agency to place a freeze on your credit report. Now, I recall, I think I actually had done this some time ago. Someone had applied for unemployment during the COVID pandemic, which we happen to still be in, but someone had applied for unemployment under my ID number, and I did notify the credit agencies and checked, and everything, nothing seemed amiss. But I believe when I had done it, it had said that the other agencies would be automatically notified. So not sure if that would apply, that you have to go to each one. And then to lift a credit freeze, if you want lenders and other companies to be able to access your credit files again, you will need to lift your credit freeze permanently or temporarily by contacting the reporting agency, and you'll use a PIN or password to lift your credit freeze. So that's something to keep in mind, especially if something, if if you feel that something has been compromised. And I would suspect that there could be more incidences of that during this time of year as people are, you know, could be less careful in the information that they're using online, etc. And then if you find errors on your credit report, you can write a letter disputing the error and include any supporting documentation as well. So that's, you know, I think that's all important to keep in mind, as I mentioned, when buying, that it's not just using the credit card and having a balance on the credit card and not paying it off, you know, faster than the minimum balance. It's also the repercussions of putting too much on credit and then that impacting your credit score as well, and how that could then impact getting hired, could get impact you getting a place to rent, or could impact you qualifying for a mortgage if you decide to buy a home at some point, or getting additional credit that you might actually, you know, really need. So just the cautions around that. Credit cards do play a very important role to establish credit as well. So you don't want to avoid credit completely, because sometimes you can't maybe rent a place or buy a home if you show that you don't have any credit. So I do think it's a good idea for young people to at least start with some type of credit card and show that you're paying it off. I know my own daughter did this, and she set it up to pay like automatically. As soon as something hit the credit card, it pays it automatically. So she is building up credit, showing that she pays it off, and, you know, she hasn't had any problem getting, you know, an apartment to rent. And, you know, she has, you know, one or two store credit cards. So that is something you can do too. A little caution about store credit cards is sometimes those interest rates are even higher than the major credit cards. So be careful of that. We have a couple calls that came in, so thank you so much. They're off air, but it's Barbara from Emmaus. She said, did a will with her husband, who's now deceased, with an attorney that is no longer in the business. Is it still valid? Yes. And does she need a specialized attorney to sign over her home to her sons? Barbara, I highly recommend going and finding another attorney, because there, it may not be such a good idea to sign your home over to your sons, and an attorney can explain to you the pitfalls of that, or if there's a workaround for you, something called, for example, a living estate, where maybe you don't completely sign the homes over to your sons, but retain a life estate to live in the home while you're alive. So you want to be careful about making moves like that, where you're signing over property to anybody. You really want to talk to an attorney, see an attorney. But yes, the will is still valid. Just because the attorney is no longer in business, the will is still valid until you either write another one, or, you know, you're gone, or there's no assets that have to go through the will. So the will tells us who is getting what, and that typically requires probate, usually with husband and wife, properties joint, or your name beneficiary. So it may not have mattered that your husband had a will if everything that you owned was either joint or beneficiary designation. Quite often, it's much more important when you have a surviving spouse. Now, if it's a blended family and, you know, you had separate property and, you know, separate children, the will, you know, could have assets going to someone other than a spouse. But we never want to make the assumption that everything goes to a spouse automatically, because that's not necessarily so. So you definitely want to probably just meet with a new attorney and have them review the will that you have. And the one you currently have might be totally good and valid. And you might not have to change anything, even if it says to your husband, because sometimes what we'll see is a will might say, you know, to my spouse, and if he doesn't survive me, then to my children. So the attorneys kind of bake in any number of scenarios in case something happens to both of you. So quite often the will that you have could still be good. But for your husband's will, it might not matter if everything's going to you, but you might want to touch base with an attorney, particularly in this circumstance where you're thinking about transferring any assets to the children. We also had a call from Anne, and Anne said, when filing annual tax forms, is there a limit to the amount you can deduct per year of your donations to a nonprofit? Anne, great question, because this is interesting because we do have a little bit of a change for 2021. For people who are familiar with the CARES Act from 2020, they allowed us for the first time in a long time, other than certain disaster relief, that we could take an above-the-line deduction for charitable giving. Years and years ago, we could take a deduction for charitable giving even if we didn't itemize. And then they changed it again years and years ago that we could only take charitable contributions if we itemized. So more recently, we've only seen it from time to time. For people who don't itemize, we couldn't take a deduction unless, I think there was like a disaster relief 1 year that they said we could take it. And they did that with the CARES Act as well. So in 2020, we could take a $300 deduction above the line. And for 2021, if we're married filing joint, we can do $600. So if you're married, you can take $600 to above the line, meaning, you know, with the standard deduction. That's when we mean above the line deduction as a standard deduction. You don't have to itemize. You can take $600. It's not a huge deduction, just FYI. Not a huge deduction, but it's something. And so you just have to keep your receipts in your files. You don't have to send that to the IRS. Keep the receipts or your canceled checks or credit card statements, whatever verifies that gift. If the gift was more than $250, you have to have documentation. And for this provision to apply, it has to be a monetary donation, not Salvation Army, you know, Goodwill kind of clothes or personal property used stuff. It's a monetary donation to a 501c3 for 2021, $300 single, $600 married filing joint. And that's an above the line deduction. Now, when you say limit, okay, now we're talking, you want to do a lot more, then you may be able to qualify to itemize some deductions. So in itemizing, if you itemize deductions and they're more than your standard deduction, then you get a little bit more than your standard deduction, right? And so itemizing, they capped the real estate taxes for now. That could change. The sale, the state and local withholding, they call it the SALT, state and local tax and or sales tax and real estate tax, that's capped at a $10,000 deduction. Typically for people who have big mortgages and you have interest, then you add the interest to the $10,000. Now we could really be getting closer to getting over that standard deduction amount. Well, if you do some big charitable giving, then you can do even more. Now, when you say, is there a limit? Well, there are some limits, but it could get a little bit complicated. So the limits are, again, under the CARES Act for 2021, and the IRS doesn't even know how to do this, by the way, because I have clients who are getting notices on it. If you do cash donations to a 501c3 in 2021, there's no limit. It's, you know, you can gift as much as what the income is on your tax return. Traditionally, it's been 60% of page one income was the limit on cash. If you want to donate appreciated securities, long-term capital gain appreciated securities, then it's a 30% limit to your page one income. All right. And then there's some other limits if you do a private foundation. So basically think, this year, 2021, there's really no limit on cash donations. 30% of your page one adjusted gross income for appreciated securities. And I was going to mention that as part of the gifting. So you're just a little ahead of me, Anne. So I hope that helps in gifting. We can gift to individuals, but we can also gift to charities. And those are some of the limits on that. So I hope that helps. And One other item I guess I should mention too, sometimes people think, well, I'm going to give to the Goodwill and I'm going to value my stuff at like $5,000. Well, if it's over $500 for non-monetary donations, you have to fill out a special form called an 8283. You have to list all of the organizations that you made non-monetary donations to and their address and the value and how you valued it. So for example, is it thrift shop value or is it fair market value? You know, if it's something really fancy and expensive, at $5,000 or more, you're going to have to get a qualified appraisal for that for the most part. So keep that in mind as well. Folks, we are almost at our last break. And Barbara, thank you so much for those questions. I really appreciate it. I like questions. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. So when we come back, I'll close up the last part of the show talking about gifting and what does it mean, the annual gifting. How much can I give when people ask me that question? We'll handle that when we get back. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Also available at WDIY.org, where you can stream live, and on the WDIY app. Prior shows are also available on WDIY.org under Public Affairs, and you can scroll through the Your Financial Choices link to find shows that may be of interest to you. Let's talk about gifting for a little bit in our considerations in holiday spending and gifting. So we had talked about how we spend and then on what, and I thought let's talk about the what a little bit. Some ideas for gifting, and it probably depends on your scale of gifting. Quite often, I have grandparents who want to gift in a big way to their grandchildren, and so I have some ideas for that. When we talk about gifting, I guess what happens is there are people, some people are in the know about this and some people, you know, are, what do I want to say, don't know about it. And that is the federal government wants us to keep track of our gifting a little bit. And where that comes from or stems from is we do have something called a federal estate tax. It's a transfer tax on assets we pass when we die. And we all get a lifetime exclusion, basically, or a lifetime exemption on the amount that we can gift without then having to incur what's called the federal estate tax or that federal gift tax. Well, that is tied to the federal estate tax exemption, which currently is $11.7 million each. So many of us not only don't have $11.7 million each, many of us aren't gifting that much either. But there are some super, super ultra high net worth people who absolutely, you know, gift those kinds of amounts because, you know, it slows down the future growth from being included in their estate as well. So, you know, that's a completely different case. But the IRS tells us if we're going to gift during our lifetime, we're eating into that exemption. All right. But if we gift less than the annual amount we don't have to file a gift tax return to let the IRS know. So normally, if we gift more than this annual amount, we have to file a gift tax return to let the IRS know we're eating into our lifetime exemption. Well, that annual amount is $15,000, and I can give $15,000 to anybody I want, and I don't have to file a gift tax return. I could give it to 1,000 people. I don't have to file a gift tax return. That could be a way I could reduce my estate lickety-split really quick. If I'm married, have a spouse, my spouse could do the same thing. We could give $30,000 to anybody we want, however we want, blah, blah. And we don't have to file or report it. So that's where the people say, you know, how much can I gift? How much I can gift? That's where it comes from. So you can gift anything you want. It's just whether you have to file a gift tax return. And if you go over your $11.7 million exemption during your lifetime, then you have to start paying a gift tax at that time. And the rates for like the federal estate tax and gift tax are 40% on those amounts above that. So let's say we're not gifting those amounts. Or let's say it's $15,000 or less. So some ideas for gifting. We've already talked about the charitable giving. So you can give cash donations or, you know, credit card donations, checkbook donations. I'm going to call those monetary donations to charity. You can donate appreciated securities. The beauty of donating appreciated securities to charity is that you don't have to recognize the gain if it's long-term gain. You don't have to recognize the gain for federal or state. You donate the securities, and if you're able to itemize, you can possibly get a deduction for that type of thing. So that's charitable giving. And as we mentioned also earlier, you could do the qualified charitable distribution from the IRA if you're age 70 and a half or older. I typically tell people to wait till your required minimum distribution age because, you know, that's when it's is required to be reported and otherwise taxable. So other ways to gift to individuals might be education. So we love education accounts, and you can make a gift to an education account. We call those 529 accounts. That's for the Internal Revenue Code section. And you can be the owner of it, and it's still considered a gift if you name, let's say, your child or your grandchild as the beneficiary of that account. And Pennsylvania, for a Pennsylvania resident, gets a deduction. Some other states allow deductions. Some states say it has to be tied to their state plan. So, for example, New York and Virginia, if you make a contribution to an education 529 account for the state plan, you can get a deduction on your tax return for those states. But Pennsylvania doesn't distinguish. You can make a contribution to a 529. You don't have to be the owner. If you're the owner, you still can control it and you can change the beneficiary. But making a contribution to that education account takes it out of your estate. It's considered a gift. And if eventually maybe the oldest child gets a scholarship, doesn't need it, and you want to change it to the next grandchild, you can do that. You still have the capability to change the beneficiary. But guess what? In Pennsylvania, if you make a contribution to a 529 that maybe your child owns for your grandchild, as long as you have their name and Social Security number, you can still get a deduction for that contribution to the 529 account. So you can make contributions as a gift. And that is a great option. Instead of things, you're contributing to the education, and you're also contributing to the tax-free growth, hopefully growing for that child's future education. So love 529 is a great, great option in gifting. You can gift, you know, some people, grandparents will buy securities for their grandchildren. I think that's a little bit more complicated. And the reason I say that is because now you perhaps have created a taxable event for that child. And children, if their investment income goes over a certain threshold, it will get taxed at the parents' rates. So you want to be careful when you think you're going to, make gifts of securities to children. Some people will, adult children, let's talk about adult children now, my grown, married, possibly grown children. If I want to make a gift to them, I can gift cash. Again, back to the rules, $15,000 or less. I don't have to report that. They don't have to report that. There's no consequences. I can just hand it over to them. I can give them a check. If I think, well, I'm going to get clever here and I'm going to gift them some of my securities because, you know, I don't want to sell them and have these big, huge gains. I'm going to give these securities to my child. That could work out well, but don't think that their cost basis is now the fair market value. I cannot tell you how many people think if I give my child $15,000 of my Amazon stock with a cost basis of $1,000, that if I had sold it, I would have a $14,000 gain. I can't tell you how many people think if I give my $15,000 stock to my child, their cost basis is now $15,000, and boo, wasn't I clever. Doesn't work that way. When you make a gift of appreciated securities or appreciated property, the person you are gifting to takes on your cost basis and your holding period. So you have to let that child know, oh, here's the $15,000 of stock, cost basis of $1,000. If you do sell it, child, you will have a $14,000 gain. That could work out very well if your child maybe isn't working and they're, you know, maybe they're in their 30s or they are an artist and they're not making tons of money. That could be a good plan, but, you know, it's up to them when they sell it. So you can gift appreciated securities not only to charity but also to family members if you choose. So we talked about education, we talked about appreciated securities. Just know that when you're gifting, they inherit or they take on your cost basis and your holding period. And again, with the annual amount that we talked about, the annual exemption, $15,000 or less, no big deal. Married filing joint, spouses can do 15 each, that's 30,000. There's certain limitations, by the way, on the getting the deduction on your Pennsylvania return. I should have mentioned that because you do have to have income, you know, each of you. If you do 15,000 each, if one spouse makes no money, they're not going to get a deduction for that. But if you both have income on your Pennsylvania return of 15,000 each at least, then you could get that deduction. And by the way, 529 plans can be used for, you know, elementary ed and high school as well. If you have private tuition, up to $10,000, not more than that. And it has to be the tuition, but it's capped at $10,000. All right. So if the tuition's 4, you can only do 4. If the tuition's 15, you can only do 10. What was the other thing I wanted to mention about gifting? Another one of my favorites. If, for example, you really want to do gifting in a big way, and sometimes the reason I mention grandparents is because quite often at some point in your later years, you realize you're not going to need all your money to, you know, pay your long-term care cost or whatever it might have been that you were holding on to. So quite often it is grandparents that are asking these questions about gifting in kind of a bit of a bigger way, whether it's to their children or their grandchildren. But I have had folks who will say to their children, do you have a Roth IRA? And if they have earnings and if their earnings are under the threshold, you can always say to them, especially when they say, no, I don't have one, hey, have you learned about the Roth IRA? I think Lori has a show on that in one of her old podcasts. And Roth IRAs grow income tax-free. It's a great tool for saving and retirement planning. But perhaps your grandchild is, you know, at their first job. Maybe they're young, in their 20s. Their income might be low enough to qualify for a Roth. And for single people, that is about $124,000 or less. You might say, how about I fund that Roth for you? So you could give them a check to fund it, or you make the check out to the custodian so that you know that your kid's not, or your grandchild's not going to cash the check, put it in their bank, and forget to fund the Roth IRA. You could say, what custodian are you using? And if they don't have one, you could give them some ideas. And they could set up a Roth IRA, and maybe that's one of your gifts. You could write a check for $6,000 to help fund their Roth IRA. I think that's a great gift. It's so much better than a television. They'll thank you in the long run. So what happens with the Roth, it's that contribution is using after-tax dollars and it grows income tax-free, and you really don't want to access that until the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. And at that time, you could take out the whole thing. But the idea is usually we let those Roths grow and grow and grow. So it's a great idea, especially for those people who may have extra funds excess funds that they want to do gifting a little bit of a bigger way, funding a Roth. And it doesn't have to be the full $6,000. You can fund a Roth with $3,000 or $2,000, whatever it might be. But then it could also get your grandchild or your child kind of in a good habit when they see that account growing. So there's some ideas for gifting, some considerations in your holiday spending, thinking about how are we spending cash, debit cards, credit cards. Be careful on all counts. Set it up for yourself to be successful in your holiday spending. Consider the consequences after the holidays as to what you might incur should you go crazy on a credit card. Make sure you're paying off those credit cards and at more than a minimum. Otherwise, it could take years and years and years and be much, much more money out of your pocket. So please be careful during this holiday season and think about how you can be more creative with some of your gift giving and maybe have experiences rather than things this year, or maybe saving with things such as retirement accounts or education accounts. So I hope the show helped tonight. Next week, we're going to talk about the elements of financial planning. As we get into the end of the year, I think it's really important to understand how all of these things work together and how making sure you coordinate your decision making sets you up for better financial goal retention and fulfillment. So thank you so much. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Eric. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you so much, listeners. Have a great week.